Okay, then, sure enough. Well, like I say, welcome to the AVVET's Military Guardians and all just sponsoring us. We're doing a podcast. It's called the Blue and the Green Podcast. And all. And I have a guest for the program today. It is Councilman Brian Jackson. He represents District 2 in North Carolina, which covers Jacksonville, North Carolina, and Camp Lejeune, which is going to be very significant during our program today. So without further ado, I'd like to have Councilman Brian Jackson just introduce himself and just tell us a little bit about yourself and you know, give us a little background on you.
Major, thank you for the opportunity to come before you and come before any citizens and that are out there in the viewing world that get an opportunity to see this. I hear you're doing great works in your area, and I look forward to the conversation. I do want to say a couple of things. I am over Ward 1 in the city of Jacksonville, but then I'm over District 2 for the North Carolina League of Municipalities, which covers about four counties.
Okay, thanks for that correction. Okay, you know, like I said, I didn't do well in political science and all those sort of things at college, so like I guess I just showed that hand. But I appreciate that correction there. So then, and that further defines who you are. And we appreciate the great work that you're doing. Some of the things we want to get into, and I did this prior to even knowing the work that you were doing, or even before I was introduced to you by our producer. But the water contamination issue, you know, that's that has to surface to the forefront in preparation for doing the programs we're doing. I was aware that there is a, I think it's a retired Master Sergeant Ensiminger, who had started the ball rolling. I don't know that you know that name or not, but he started the ball rolling a little bit ago. And I followed some of his work. There's a videotape. I don't know that you've seen that too, but we have access to that. But again, we're talking about the same issue, the same problem there, the water contamination issue, like, and it's ongoing. And when I heard it, I thought that sounds like almost a science fiction type of thing that really is not happening. But it is happening. So I'd like to hear some introductory comments you have about that situation.
Yes, sir. I like your producer, I'm probably, he told you before, we grew up in a military area. His father was a Marine, actually a Camp Lejeune Marine, one of the first Marines. My father came in during the Korean War, but he didn't go into Korean War. And actually he did go into Vietnam. And I was fortunate for the community I came in. It was surrounded by what we call the Mumford Point Marines, which were the first Black Marines. They were trained right here at Camp, what was called Mumford Point, eventually became Camp Johnson, named after the first Sergeant Major, Black Sergeant Major in the Marine Corps.
Okay.
Anyway, to further go where you're, you know, with the comments you said concerning water contamination, our community has been greatly impacted. It hasn't really come full circle when it comes to the issue of water contamination. Currently, I know that actually any service member who stayed over 30 days on the base, Camp Lejeune, and the associated bases around the area, mm-hmm. if they have a condition associated, which has been named, you know, to be actually with exposure concerning the contaminated water issue, they actually can file for disability through the VA. Their family only can get some medical care based on conditions at the VA. There hasn't been any payment, far as I understand, concerning civil service personnel. My mother worked as in what was called moral MWR, with morale, welfare, and rec.
Oh yes. And
then there are other individuals, like I can't remember if our producer were actually what we call the sticky boys. There was a group of guys that used to ride a van and actually go out and sell newspapers to Marines. So, and our producer actually at times ended up at Camp Lejeune playing basketball. So the connection.
It was a good hustle.
Yeah, a great hustle. But anyway, there's been even individuals, I know of individuals, we could look at the street I live on, and I know at least five people that died of pancreatic cancer. Two of them include my mother, who passed away September 2nd, will make a year, and my brother, who died in 2004. Both of them
died. Sorry to hear that. So sorry.
Thank you for that. Thank you. Wonderful people.
I know it. I know it. Hey, look at you. So they had to be.
Yeah, my service has a lot to do with those two individuals. But, you know, like I said, those are the ones that I know of that have pancreatic cancer. There's few I know of. But there are other cancers that persons have had on our street, which isn't a long street in terms of neighborhoods. And I could go around the neighborhood and just keep on picking off people that have died of cancer. Mm. Also, I could look at other people in the surrounding areas. I talked, you know, it's been mentioned. I know you discussed, it was Simba Fi, Always Faithful, the movie. I think it was, that was the documentary concerning the I forget his rank right now. Oh man.
Yeah, Master Sergeant.
Master Sergeant. You bet. You know, in the death of his daughter, and from my understanding, there were other children around the same time that had, you know, that had these certain diseases associated with the contamination. They said it went from the years of 57 to 87, but I talked to someone that was involved in our environmental issues, and they said that stuff just doesn't disappear over that time. So I really believe that time should be expanded. I did have a conversation with the current secretary of the Environmental Protection Agency, Secretary Regan. He's actually, hails from North Carolina, Goldsboro, North Carolina.
Oh.
And, you know, and like myself, he's an Aggie for North Carolina State University. So, but we did have an opportunity to have a conversation with the National Black Caucus of local elected officials. And I told them, you know, my story concerning my family and just in this neighborhood. And they're supposed to be having conversations, EPA talking to DOD with having a further conversation. First time they're actually getting together concerning all these various bases that was affected. Because Camp Lejeune wasn't the only one. I hear out of San Diego and down in Beaufort. Now it's Beaufort, South Carolina.
Oh, yeah.
As well. And I also, not only, and they said that the area is usually about a 9-mile radius from the base. We had an extra issue that included contamination by cleaners. So, wow. They counted that as being in the Camp Lejeune water, but that cleaners was actually on the civilian side. But we have had further conversations, but I did bring that up to the Secretary of the EPA, and hopefully he'll follow that up, because I could continue with my family. Not only was it my mother and brother, I have an uncle, which was my mother's brother, two great aunts that we know of, and possibly one great aunt that they called gastric cancer. But all the others all died of pancreatic cancer.
Wow, that's significant. You know, that's just a horrifying cluster of things. And hopefully the EPA can get on it, because one thing that I've noticed in my research, working with the producer, of course, whenever you get something that, because this is going to be big, you know, as it evolves, and it needs to be big. But we hope that it doesn't get the cold shoulder. If it doesn't end up in a file somewhere, if it's ignored, basically, you know, and that's always the risk of something this large. Because what you're talking about, when I first heard about it, I said, this is huge, you know, and I'm concerned, because obviously the military, there's a mechanism set up for the military to be compensated, whatever. But then there's the civilian side, because like I say, again, as I've been in the military, did my 20 years in the Air Force, there was always a spouse, there were children. And so like, if I got affected, they would, too. And, you know, but in your case, look at the statistic, you know, the grim statistic, yes. You know. And so have you anticipated, or have you experienced any headwinds? And there's a sound that he got right through to the secretary, But now, are you feeling any headwinds?
Currently, I haven't had any additional information. I was going to give him a certain amount of time and reach back to him to see if he doesn't connect with us, National Black Caucus, the local elected officials, and to follow up concerning the issue, because it is a huge issue. And I hope that others within our community that have been affected, or at least know somebody has been affected, and know that this was a travesty in this community, because we're all neighbors, that they can also get behind this effort going forward.
Leaning forward on that, you're putting it in a good context. It's not going to be just you. Obviously, you're a very powerful voice. You come from a very powerful position. But I find that in these types of matters, like the matters, some other matters that we're working on, separate from this, as we get people involved in it, it becomes like almost a movement, so to speak. But that's good, because now it's not just one voice. And it's hard to, for me, for any adversary, and there'll be adversaries out there, because look how long it's gone. And nothing is seemingly happening. Right. On something, this significant, it's kind of mind boggling to me, but you're still fighting the fight. But I would say that the fact you've included others to get them active, and I know you're going to do that from your, it's not a bully pulpit. I mean, you're good, because, you're the man and you've been placed there. And I think because of your character, because of the motivation that you've already expressed, and there's others out there, this is to invite them in. And I know that you're going to do that.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Because, when I ran, I said, I'm your voice, a representative of the people. Sometimes, being an African-American sitting in a position, they say, well, you speak for Black people. No, I represent people, but they walk side by side because they voted for me to come in to this position. And I also recognize, because we're dealing with a whole redistricting issue now. And, they have this idea of one man, one vote. And, some areas that are, we have what we call a minority majority ward system here. So make sure that we had African representation in the majority Black wards. So we are going through every 10 years after the census, we go back through redistricting. So that's a hot topic now, especially in this heated time concerning the efforts of those that don't want us all to get along. I'll say that.
Speaking, brother.
To be nice right now. So these things are, we had to come up with a committee. We're actually nonpartisan at this time. When I made my choice because each council member had opportunity to choose. When I made my choice, I had a friend, longtime resident of here, and younger man, I know he could possibly be here in the next 10 years. So I chose him. He happened to be, they said there was five Democrats and one Republican up there. I didn't think about, and like I said, we're nonpartisan, just like the other persons that's on our city council. They just picked people that they thought would be representative of the community that, was going to be affected, and just good people to make. It comes down to what the federal government has designed, and the state. So it's not like, that a state actually, when they draw the lines, it's not like we can actually move the lines. It's through a formula. So regardless who sits in there, there'll be a lot of input, but regardless who sits in those seats as observers and participators, and as a council, we still got to make the final decision. I'm sorry to take it in that direction, but when I mentioned that one man, one vote, they talk about low voter turnout. And one thing I mentioned to them is that one man, one vote based on the census don't mean everybody votes. That means the population number. So just because they're not voting doesn't mean I don't represent them. And there's if there's no one speaking up for the people of those areas, then they are left out, because the other persons that's on that council don't have to deal with those issues that occur in these low income wards. So I hope that we make a strong resolution and the council in the future looks at, you know, can be holistic in their viewpoint when it comes to dealing with everybody in our community. We talk about my city, your city, our city as as our motto, but we got to live it instead of just say it.
You bet. Well, I tell you what, when you mentioned redistricting, I've heard in other scenarios in other states, you hear the G word, the gerrymandering. And I saw an article that's really, to me, it's kind of frightening, but if it's not checked, it could happen. They're saying that Governor Ron DeSantis out of Florida will deliver the House of Representatives in Washington to the Republican Party due to the gerrymandering. I'm sure he wanted to say redistricting. So that's something that has to be monitored. Sounds like you guys got a grip on that and you recognize it. I just hope and pray that the other states, like the situation Stacey Abrams ran into in Georgia, you know, she had to kind of stay one step ahead of that because, you know, the governor, eventually elected governor, who, of course, beat her in a fair election, is running ahead of her, you know, even prior to the elections, setting things up, so to speak. So and I'm sure you're in touch with that. Georgia, Florida, those types of things. You know, so it sounds like you're running ahead of that. You're running interference. And that's great.
Well, I add North Carolina. I think there's approximately about 40 something states that's trying to turn back the clock.
Okay, you know, good point.
Create a bizarro world where we all don't have the same rights to vote, you know? And we, you know, there are standards set, but hopefully that our city can accept what is done and during this redistricting effort. And I hope that those have been called so-called disenfranchised will step up as well. I'm having an issue right now that occurred where there could be a large amount of people that can be moved out of my ward as a result of a decision by city management to condemn a town, what we call, used to be called New River, but it's called Town Center Apartments now.
Okay.
This apartment complex have been dealing with problems for a long time.
Okay.
We've had an issue with getting, I call either mixed use or affordable housing. So now that rainy day is upon us, and the ownership has the and by October 25 have to come up with a plan to put these individuals to be in a safe environment, or 299 families will be put out of their apartments. And Jacksonville, like many other communities, is suffering from housing issues. Not enough affordable housing, mixed-use housing, or just housing, period.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can see that's going to be obviously it's going to affect the voting situation, et cetera. And I'm sure this has been thought out, but it's those types of moves that I'm so concerned about. But, you know, I get the feeling and I'm encouraged for your area that you're ahead of that. You know, you're aware of that. And it seems like with your nature being the outspoken one, you know, representing the people, that you're going to keep that out there in the forefront, because that's the sort of thing, if unchecked, you can run away from you. Now it's midterm time. Midterms, of course, that's the next big issue, you know, and all. And so that's the one that I've been keeping an eye on. And obviously you have been too. I mean, something as small as just like, you know, on the surface, doing something good for the people, getting them out of certain areas, getting them out of certain situations. You have to kind of look behind the scenes, like, now what's really happening here? They're eroding the vote type of thing.
That's
right. And that's the thing, you got to get away from that. But getting back, I was thinking about the, again, the water contamination issue. Trying to get some sort of compensation other than just free medical or whatever you were stating that's offered to the civilian side. Because, again, you know, even though it's a military type based situation, there's civilians all around. You know, there's civilians, of course, they're spouses and dependents of the military people. And you begin to wonder, like, OK, are they going to be just left out, you know, just because, you know, they can do that type of thing, or they have been doing that. So any progress, work toward that, getting the civilian population squared away with compensation?
Well, I'm not seeing, you know, I know there was lawsuits put forward, but I'm not seeing or have knowledge of any compensation right now. Like as I mentioned before, you know, you have families of military personnel that possibly file for VA compensation for the condition, and only thing they are is getting medical. And the concern, my concern, is we all dealing with a timetable, and because none of us last forever. And That's true. You know, hoping that all the conditions are identified, you know, fairly, because sometimes, like you've probably known from the VA scale, you know, compensation table, and when it mentions certain conditions, they have added conditions. As a matter of fact, I think as recent as the last 5 years, they've added additional conditions. But how many have passed? And even though they haven't gotten the compensation, was their spouse, or if there was any dependents, you know, at that point, which a lot of them would have been matured and over the age to get any money associated with dependents. But a lot of people are left out. A lot of people will get left out.
You're speaking to a time clock, you know, type of thing. You have, and I think I heard it in Master Sergeant Ensminger's presentation about the statute of limitations. And sometimes the people who will not help you, the people who you're going up against, will be just as content with running the clock out. You know, right. Like I say, and it seems rather morbid, but if they sit back long enough, the constituency that's going to go up against them will literally die out. You know, and that's what I say, that's kind of morbid. So have you sensed that there's an attempt to just run the clock out to, take the complaints, put them in the proverbial black box, or just otherwise just discard them? You know, is there a follow-up, the things that we've done or that you've done and others have done, you know, is there any progress there? It doesn't look like it's just stuck in the mud. It's just, you know, it's no progress at all. Have you sensed any of that?
I have sensed it. And what I'll say is that it was knowledge that U.S. government, Marine Corps knew that this was an issue.
Okay.
And it took others to find out about it to speak up. So in that case, and you will actually take people that have served in wars, offered to give their life for this country, and you know of this issue that affected not only them possibly, but also their families, and you do not speak up as a government. I mean, we need to really be concerned about that. And I think that speaks to any effort, because a lot of times it's about dollars and cents.
Okay.
And you know, and we talk about compensation, you talk about the numbers, and there are deep concerns about, that's why I said, letting that clock run out, because as that clock runs out, less people will be compensated. So I do believe in a lot of cases, Agent Orange, we knew this chemical can affect humans in a very adverse way. And, you know, it took a while before the government stepped up and said these conditions are the result of exposure. So I have a deep concern that our governments will step up. That's why I always tell the people, it's not me the people, it's not she the people or he the people, it's we the people. So if we don't speak up, then there will be no voice for us.
Okay, that's a very good point, because especially with the Agent Orange issue too, because my brother was involved in that type of thing. He did Vietnam. He was in country. I did Southeast Asia also. But like I said, I saw the war from 35,000 feet. What I meant by that is, of course, I was an air crew member of B-52 bombers. So, but I did follow with the Agent Orange issue. And again, my brother ran into an issue where it's the sort of thing that, you know, if you don't speak up, or I shouldn't say act up, but if you don't speak up, then they'll just turn a cold shoulder to it. And it seems rather impersonal. And I believe that it is on purpose. It's he got the impression that, hey, it's the VA money, which it is not. It's the people's money, the VA money. And they're not willing to just give it up type of thing. So no matter how you come at them, they're going to try to throw up, you know, roadblocks, and whatever else they can do, delay, stall, you know, type of thing, let the clock run out, as opposed to helping the people. So that's the thing that I think, you know, and the larger issue that I'm working with the you know, the blue and the green, which of course, you know, I'm working with that, AFVETS, et cetera, trying to rally support for those who are affected and find out. You can identify your group right there, you know, in the Camp Lejeune area. You mentioned San Diego, of course, you know, Marine, you know, setups out there, you know, military type of thing. But, and I don't know, like I say, maybe that's something that come on downstream, because you're only one person, but you have a mighty voice. And all. And so that's something that I think that if you present, and I'm not going to say like a million man march type of thing, you know, right. Well, that got some attention type of thing. But obviously, right. In your scenario, that wouldn't be practical. But something along those lines at a smaller level, you know, and I know that you're leaning in that direction, because that's the way I'm going to. And I see that as a fix to what it is we need to do. But it just really bothers me to see and to hear you actually speak it. I was aware, you know, through contacts and through my research of some things, but, you know, this is something that just has to be addressed and all. And so, and I hope that we can get that, you know, that one person that, what is it, the secretary of the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency?
Yes, sir.
We can get him to move, but he can't do it by himself. And I know he's aware of that too. So hopefully he'll arm himself, you know, to do that. And I know that you're monitoring that.
Yes,
so
sir.
I wish you, yeah, go ahead.
Can I speak towards the VA again? And, you know, I've had healthcare as a dependent. I've had healthcare as an active duty E4 in the Navy.
Okay.
I had healthcare as a person that was a civilian, you know, and with insurance and without. And one thing I've learned about healthcare, sometimes it's not about the health or the system, it's about the care. And in dealing with it as a someone who worked in the veteran service arena for 10 years, over 10 years,
okay.
I worked for AMVETS, and then I did most of my time with the Veterans of Foreign Wars, some of the greatest time I've had as an employee anywhere. And one of the things I learned is that there are people, to include people that have disabilities, that make the bad decisions that others have to live with.
Yes.
You know,
It does seem like there's a check or balance on that. They have like a free hand. They're out there, their missteps, mistakes are obvious, but nothing's really happening. And so we have to kind of tolerate that. And I know you've probably seen that too. So I didn't mean to cut you off.
No problem, sir.
You bet. But and that's that sort of thing there, the impersonality of it all that has to be addressed, because that's one thing that I ran into. I hesitated, you know, after 20 years, you know, career type of thing. And I've got some things I brought from active duty on into civilian life, too. But I was disappointed. So about a year or so ago, when they rose a big stink about how, you know, insufficient the VA services were. They're supposed to have fine-tuned, they're supposed to have gotten a new secretary, the whole bit. And quite honestly, I hate to say this, but I've stood back. And I've said, let me see what's going to happen type of thing. And I should have gotten in there as a participant. But it sounds like you're aware of these sort of things. And I know that you, with your background, you have done some things and you're going to speak up. And I want to join you in that, you know, because like I say, after the show's over, I wanted to ask some issues that probably wouldn't be appropriate for this time, you know, for the topic we're speaking of. But I just appreciate your work. And I just say, you know, right on, brother, you know, keep it going, keep the movement going, because it is a movement after all said and done. And that's how we're going to get it done. Again, I go back to that topic. It's a movement. It's going to get done.
Yes, sir. And one thing I do want to say is we have so many issues with our healthcare system anyway. And that's all health. One thing about the VA is the largest healthcare system. So they're easy to be identified. And then it's public. We have so many hospitals and it's become corporation work. I've talked to a lot of dedicated nurses and other individuals in that system that are so disgusted that you have businessmen, they've taken over healthcare. So as I said before, the health is the care isn't there. So the health isn't orchestrated like it should be.
And you see that in the civilian life, how, like say, you're throwing the ball right into the, you know, in the corporate arena. And, you know, there'll be the old expression, nothing personal, just business type of thing.
Right.
And I think that manifests itself in so many different ways. And that, and you're aware of that, and I am too. But like I said, that's got to be fixed. And like I said, yeah, I think that for what you're doing and what I'm signing on to and what we're broadcasting out to the people, hopefully it's going to, you know, spark a little thought in their mind, like, hey, let me get up off my duff or whatever, like, and try to join in, try to do something. Like I said, again, we have, I have set up for the military, the AFVETS situation, AFVETS.net, and encouraging people to come on board. And I know that you're going to have something in your regard, something similar to that. But I just say, let's move forward together, because now, again, we're moving off into some concerns. And I know, and I forgot to tell you, and I'm remiss. Thank you for your service, because I
was about to say the same to you, because you dedicated yourself to a whole lot more time to our uncle Sam and I. It's so definitely thank you for your service and your sacrifices. And I know the time that you went in was a whole lot different than the time when I went in. So I really appreciate what you have done. You lay down foundations for a lot of us to follow you, regardless of what service that you served in.
You bet. And I appreciate that. I'm glad to hear that. I am also thinking later on for, we're thinking of topics for, the show that we're going to be doing, the podcast and all, but we're going to try to bring that Vietnam experience, and there's still a lot of us veterans around, and bring it into a discussion with the Gulf War veterans type of thing. And you made a very good point. And it's just like when I was talking with the original Tuskegee Airmen, and there's still just a few of them around from the World War II time frame, comparing notes, et cetera. Like, it's a learning experience. It's a learning thing. A lot of the things that we experienced in the Vietnam era type of thing, that road's already been, gone down. The bridge has already been crossed type thing. We just didn't realize it, but we get a different perspective. So now as me as a Vietnam veteran, talking to you as a Gulf War veteran type of thing. Yeah. And I'm going to encourage that sort of thing. So this is a plug for future shows.
Keep tuned. It is.
We're going in that direction. But I'm just curious, after your Gulf War experience, how did everything go for you? It's a challenge to kind of talk about it. Like I say, during the Vietnam War, we came along right during the Black Power movement. And all again, of course, I was at an HBCU. The Howard University. So right there in the district, right there in the District of Columbia, and all that went along with that. So when I, as I prepared to go, and then when I came back, it was something. What was your experience coming back?
When I come back in it, I had some exposure myself, and I wasn't, I was on the water because I served on the USS Theodore Roosevelt, an CVN-71 aircraft carrier. And I was a technician, worked in radar systems there. Okay. But some of us have experienced things like irritable bowel, fibromyalgia. There's so many muscle issues, headaches, those that were close to the burning oil, wells and stuff. They have respiratory issues and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And like Vietnam, there are people still coming forth with various conditions. Another issue though, but that I had, I actually injured my neck after being in 2 years. I actually made a move, lifted a radar indicator awkwardly, and my neck locked up. I found out over a year and a half period, it went from locking up to I started losing feeling in my hand. And I actually found out that I had a ruptured disc in my neck. And 1 month after getting out, I actually got a medical discharge, but after I went through that, I actually had a ruptured disc, and I had surgery 2 months out, and I went through a long recovery period, and I was very aware because I actually went in older with more, I'd seen a few more things than the average person coming out at that time, because I went in when I was 21. But I don't even remember the VA showing up in our briefings. Unlike now, you can actually begin your VA claim and, 180 days, before you get out, and you could have your claim done within a month from that 180 days. It's a faster process. If you get good information, everybody's still not getting good information, but they do have briefings now. But going down that road and some of the experiences I had, because I was out of work for a while. I was in and out of school for a while because I was having massive headaches and neck locking up and having other issues. I think it might have stopped issues from getting worse at the time, but they were still, you know, still other conditions that, you know, it always caused me a problem. It's been many years before I've gone a day without pain. And, you know, once you reach certain numbers, that pain increases even more. So you might see me twitch or turn different ways to try to get some level of comfort. But, you know, these things tend to tell on you as time goes on. And you might not, just like, you know, there's latent issues that stay under the cover for a while, even when you have certain exposures, when you've had certain injuries, it's the same thing. So, you know, so it's been a journey, you know?
I know it has been. And the same thing happened with me. Of course, like I say, right in initial flight training, we had to do parasailing type of thing. And there was a knee injury for me during that. And it is, you just kind of got poo-pooed. I mean, they didn't make a big to-do about it. Another thing, flying in, of course, combat aircraft, B-52, you have to stay strapped in for your own safety and security in case the airplane gets shot, as they say, shot out from under you. You need to have a way of getting out. But I was always told, well, later on in life, you're going to, have lower back problems. I said, this must be later on in life because it's kicking it. I'm at a point where I can tell the weather better than the Weather Channel. You know, when the back starts acting up, you probably went through that, I know as well. But yes, again, as I approached separation of service, because I, you know, hit retirement, I was cautioned, be sure you get a copy of all your records, et cetera. And this is a little birdie told me that. It wasn't part of an out brief or anything else. They said, be sure to go do as best you can to get copies of everything, you know, because you can later file it. Now, my son, and I give him massive kudos because he was a Gulf War veteran, four tours in Iraq. But then, like I said, again, he had three sons, and he said, it's time for me to come home and take care of my sons. So he separated at 11 years, but he kept volumes of information, and he went ahead and pursued it because I told him to do that. Now, looking at Dad, did I do that? No. There was a certain, I guess, mindset when some of us came out of the Vietnam conflict that it wasn't an apathy, but it was the sort of thing that, you know, seeing what we saw, as you observed with the VA, they were missing in action. The VA was missing in action. Where were they? Type of thing. So we just kind of took it as, oh, well, sign of the times type of thing. We didn't pursue anything. So that's something that I have been told that since I have you as a guest, then probably, you know, kind of, you know, pick your brain a little bit later on there to figure out, help me get back on track type of thing, though. But also the service that you did and all, you're an African-American. I was African-American. How was that, you know, type of thing? Can you speak to that in terms of the work that you did, camaraderie, lack thereof, getting out, being looked at? Because as we were reminded, and as I did research on the Tuskegee Airmen, because I lectured on them, a lot of them, when they got back to the States, it was almost like, you know, they went back to the same old status, like they didn't do anything. They wore the uniform. That would bring on discrimination toward them. You know, how odd that is. They went out to sacrifice their life and all. But now I didn't see that as a Vietnam vet coming. There were certain nuances and you could feel it. You know about that. But I didn't know how it was for you, like, you know, generations later coming out of the Gulf War, coming home from the Gulf War.
One thing I think it was a change in the times, and we were fortunate, you know, even as, and it seemed like where there were rates, or in your terms, might have been MOSs or different jobs in the military, where there were more of a certain African-Americans, more in those areas, I had friends that had more problems there. You know, I had a group of guys that we were all under what we, that was under operations. Oh my God, it's been so long, but it's operations where we had the, all the communications guys, the air guys, and everybody that worked on the electronic systems, they were in a one group. So it's like with us, I didn't see as much discrimination there. I have to say, even my interactions with my other, comrades in arms, for even in the Navy, the ones we had in my work centers, I was blessed in that manner. You know, some of it was unfortunate, but some of the most difficult issues I had was what other African Americans. You get to some, I hate to say, my father used to call them bootlickers. And, it's like they're trying to impress somebody else and they don't respect them for what they do to others. So mm-hmm. I did have a couple of those issues. Actually, when we were in Israel, we faced some things there, a couple of friends and I, but for the most part, I can say that I had a lot of great opportunities and have a lot of friends that I still carry forward with myself. Matter of fact, your producer and my best friend, he knows some of the guys I serve with. So it's like we just created a larger family, so to speak. So like I said, I was fortunate in that way. I felt even, I was on equal terms with anybody that came out of the military at that time that ran into issues where I've seen guys with cancer that came out with 10% and their cancer was active. So I didn't feel alone in that in terms of race. It's just like they were treating us all equally bad, as I found out later, because you're going in there and you're blind. You know, you talk about the Vietnam era guys, and I felt really bad being as young as I was, having to go to, it was Hampton, VA at the time, and I'm seeing World War II guys, I'm seeing Korean War guys, and Vietnam guys. And the Vietnam, your era,
yes, a lot,
you all were treated bad when you came back.
Yes, sir.
It wasn't looked at as one of the wars in some cases. So, and you had some of these persons that was working for the VA. So a lot of you guys was turned away, and it took a lot for us to get you all to turn back. You know, that was like your son is telling you, you need to go back and look at this, and you're not alone in that. So it was a travesty that there wasn't a welcome. It took years later for them to finally say, welcome home to you all as well.
And that's it too. And we felt it, but I don't know if it was all part of the Black experience growing up. Being cold-shouldered, being overlooked, or whatever. I don't know if that was all part of the psyche, but to me personally, when I got back, I didn't look for anything, I didn't expect anything, and so therefore I didn't see anything. But again, it goes back to the thing that's on me: nothing ventured, nothing gained. I didn't venture anything, I didn't see anything. But now I'm learning, and I listen to you, and I'm aware of the work that you've done too. And if the listening audience is not aware, you've done some great progress and strides in working with veterans. It's almost like, to me, it seems like it's a calling for you. And that's a good thing. We need brothers out there who answer that calling. And then that makes me feel good, because now I know, hey, I got a listening ear. But again, the few times I did approach VA, it was just like, a cold shoulder. And I thought that, I spent time over in Southeast Asia, carrying the war as best I could, from 35,000 feet type of thing. And then to get this sort of thing, and I felt it. And then getting out of the service, the same thing. So that's something that has to be addressed and all. And like I say, I'm glad that you brought it up in the context that you did, because we have to work that. We have to get that issue. It can get better. It's not good. It can get better. It has to get better. We're going to try to work on that. I know that, like I said, now when I got back, the one thing that I did note, of course, being an officer, being an aviator, usually whenever I was assigned to any particular base, I was like the only officer there. And I would have, and it's something that's really kind of humbling to me, where I would see a young African-American, airman, or then, of course, the women in the Air Force as well. They just walk up to me and just, say, we have never seen a Black officer before, type of thing. That was very humbling. So that put an onus or a burden on me to really represent and do it well. But I know that if I did that, I'd be out there by myself. There's a couple of cases I could mention. And this, I think, came up in one of the one of my reviews. I don't know if you probably didn't have access to it, but as being an officer, I was put in charge of judicial boards. And a lot of times it was disproportionate to the number of African-Americans, young African-American listed, who would come up for discharge. And I would just speak the truth. I would speak the truth and state, like, one quick example, and I'm not going to belabor this, because I want to move on. We had a young man who was about to be put out of service because he did a drug screening. And so they said, we have a case of cannabis, marijuana type of thing. We're going to separate this guy. As it turns out, I found out through my research, being the chairman of the judicial board, that the Air Force was using, I think it's a 2 points of comparison. Now, I'm warning off into an area I don't really know that much about, but it was kind of a primitive way of screening for a drug abuse, for drug usage. And I knew that through the Jet magazine, some of us who remember Jet magazine, some of us don't, they had given an article about that. And they said there is a more definitive test. Like, it used, I think, 3 or 4 points of comparison. The cannabis strain, which is, of course, is the bad stuff, is very close to melanin, which is why we're the color we are. Wow. And if you use the 2 points of comparison, you get the same readout. It's time for them to go. I knew that. And I was cautioned by the base commander. Of course, you know, he's the commanding officer. Well, look, it's the sort of thing that, let's not make waves. You know, this person got identified with the system that we are using, so they have to go. I said, no, there's a better system, and it's going to, you know, salvage this guy's career. And I did that, and it did. Now, people said, Davis, they're going to get you. I said, well, get me, because, like, I was just that type of maverick type of thing.
Right.
It's regrettable that, you know, we have to do that. I don't know if you ever saw anyone in a leadership role step up like that, but, you know, for me, it was that time to do that. And that's why, again, I'm getting involved with, you know, the blue and the green, athletes, et cetera, because I'm taking that same spirit. And I think I kind of overwhelmed the producer. He didn't know I was that madman, so to speak. But, you know, but hey, I'm on medication, so it's okay.
Yeah, I say the same thing. You know, and I did actually went to some of the discharge boards myself and represented individuals when I worked for Veterans of Foreign Wars. And one of the ones I despise going to was going to the one that discharges of Marines and Naval personnel. There was a colonel at the time, and the word says that he didn't make a general. So it's like he had an axe to grind. And you had two other officers that would always agree with him.
Okay.
And it's like anybody that came through there, they didn't have a chance. They just didn't have a chance. It's like, I did what I could for him, but I you know, it's like, it was just sad. Mm-hmm. It was just sad. And I would often tell them, you know, I'm trying to have to go back and, you know, after a certain, I can't think of the period of time, you could go back and go for another review. Change a military record, I think it was called.
Okay.
So, and it's something, I'm remembering things that happened years before, and I can't remember anything from earlier today. But,
okay.
But yeah.
Well, I'm in the same boat. You're not alone.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. But I've seen some terrible issues. And even going back to that, you know, I saw it happen for all races, you know.
Okay.
That's why, you know, and I even when I... My area that I'm dealing with, I told you I'm having an issue with people being displaced. It's a low income issue. It's not a race issue. And I've seen it time and time again where they divide the races, but they have the same issue.
Mm-hmm.
Because of that, the races do not come together and respond to the issue that's affecting both of them.
Okay. You know?
And it's very disappointing that, you know, a person believes because the color of their skin, you know, that is the only determinant to make them better to somebody else. And they don't work alongside of the person that has more in common with them than the ones that's holding them back.
Okay. But, and that's good. Sometimes we tend to get tribal, or we tend to get very parochial in the way we look at things. And you have to open up your eyes because, Now, I experienced something, you know, very quickly. I'll bring this up because what you just mentioned is something that I think I have to bring up right now. There was a Passover situation for me for a promotion to lieutenant colonel. That's why I retired as a major. And I can't get into, you know, long and drawn out about why whatever happened. But as it turns out, the vice wing commander, who's the second guy in charge at the base, he had it in for African Americans. He never came out with a statement to that effect, but you could feel the winds. You could feel right. It. And when I was up for the first time up for lieutenant colonel, I had participated in a project there that had something to do with the Chernobyl air sampling, et cetera. I was a project officer. My airplane found a cloud, but he decided, and it was a white officer, his executive officer, who called me up and says, "Hey, I need to talk to you," you know, type thing. I got to the office. "We need to take it outside." So I'm thinking, okay, let's get it on. I don't know why we're fighting. He said, no, the walls have ears. I knew what that meant. And he walked out, he says, "Look, I've been directed to lock your officer effectiveness report, your promotion folder. I've been directed to lock that up." I said, it's time for the promotion board. He said, "It's not going to make it in time for that." And I'm thinking, what? He said, "You know, all the work that you did for the project that you did, your boss, you know, a white officer, is going to get credit for that." He had already had one Passover for lieutenant colonel. And if you know anything about, you know, the history and the stats, you get one Passover at that level, that's kiss of death. That's it. You'd almost have to catch Jesus falling off an airplane. We know Jesus doesn't use scheduled airlines, so that's not going to happen, type of thing. So my accomplishment was used. And the colonel that did that didn't think twice about it. Now I have a problem. The young executive officer who brought that to my attention, he looked at me and said, "Do what you got to do." I said, "No, I'm going to protect you, because if it wasn't for you, I never would have known that," type of thing. I sat on that for years. Because again, it could have affected him. But as it turns out, he was already being affected because he was a straight arrow type of guy. You know, he's going to speak the truth. And sometimes at the higher levels within rank, right, that's not necessarily the thing to do. You have to kind of like kiss up, you know, play the game type of thing. He didn't do that. So he was in the same predicament I was. And I sensed that. And I appreciated what he did. But as it turns out, and some people say, you know, vindictive, the officer that did that to me went on to Europe to an assignment. And someone called me up and says, "Man, I tell you, you're going to be jumping through hoops." I said, "What happened?" He said, "No, that colonel that it really just messed you over, to mess with you. He was told by his commander, either resign your commission or get court-martialed." As it turns out, he had an incident, racially charged incident, with two African-American tech sergeants, which Air Force-wise, that's like a, like an E-7. Right. He had two racially charged incidents. And so he had to either resign his commission or get court-martialed. He resigned, of course, keep his benefits and got out. I didn't take a victory lap on that, because again, that's the Christian in me. I prayed for him, type of thing. Right. And I would hate to see anybody in that circumstance, but like I said, he dug the hole and he jumped right in. And so that's it. But that sort of thing happened to me. And I'm thinking you probably seen these types of things.
You know, Major, you remind me, sorry about that. And it's something, the things that you bury, I guess, but you do remind me of one racial incident I had, and that anytime a ship comes off of a deployment, they go into the shipyards.
Okay, and
at that time, being an E4, they brought us down, a lot of us from different departments, to actually supervise what we call fire watches. Because when you do welding on a ship, it's easy for fires to take place on a ship. Fires take place on ships all the time.
And that's a lot scary. Of people
understand it's a ship can be a very dangerous place at all times. But so you would have to put fire watches on each wall to actually do welding. And welding takes, you know, it's all over the ship and under the ship as well. So we had to, when they first started this process, they actually took, the welders would come down. They would actually take the fire watches back to the area, which is, it could take forever to get to an area on a aircraft carrier.
Oh, yeah.
And then they would have to, you know, the shift ends, then they have to go back and do the same thing. So that didn't really make sense to me, because I saw, you know, you losing a lot of time as a result of those welders having to stop their work. So what I came up with, let's stagger the times. Mm-hmm. And also let us bring the fire watches to replace the ones that's already there. So the welding never stops.
Okay. You know?
But it came down to a meeting, and I hate to say it, but it was an E4 that can barely, you know, tie shoes that became the one who came up with that issue. And I remember talking to a friend of mine, said, "Why do you care so much?" And I just, that stayed with me. And I said, that's just, I come from that, you know?
It's in your DNA.
Right. I come from that. And it's like, it was disappointing. When things like that happen to you, it's so disappointing because you want to believe the best out of people, you know? And unfortunately, we don't always get it, you know? So, yeah, but I had totally forgotten about that issue, you know? So.
And that's the sort of thing, again, as we talk about it, as we get into the alphabets, as we get into the blue and, you know, the green and all, these sort of things come up, and that kind of helps fill in the blanks, kind of helps connect some dots, whatever, because like, say, you know, that was on your mind, like, and it was something I mentioned, you know, and that's why we keep the dialogue going. That's why this, and this to me is a robust dialogue, because, you know, we're kind of, we're peeling back the layers type of thing. We're seeing things, you know, because I've learned a lot from you, especially with municipal government type of thing, the Veterans Affairs types of thing, which I turn my back on it, you know, type of thing, you know, not being a good citizen. But as I'm sensing, you know, and I think I'm trying to get into a point where I'm taking your time. But one other area I really want to touch on, and just to get your opinion, your feelings on it. What happened on January 6th of this year at the nation's capital? We've seen footage. We've seen all kinds of things. I've already addressed that issue, type of thing, with different people, with different motivations. We had a very prominent guy, just the producer and I talked to just very recently. We had a whole different concept because I was speaking of, in my mind, speaking the truth, an insurrection. He had a problem with that. And I thought, what? But I didn't say that to him. I mean, out of respect, I didn't. But I'm just curious as to your take on it. I mean, with your background, where you've been, the things you've done, what we talked about, what was your feeling about that?
You know what? I'll say there were some people that said they were surprised. I was deeply disturbed and disappointed. But I knew with all the energy and all the negativity that was coming up and, you know, dealing with race in our country and the issues with it. And, you know, you starting these ideas that the elections was rigged and all these other crazy ideas that allowed our democracy, our republic, to be destroyed. And many of the people that was involved is prior military, you know? And it's incredible to me that people can latch on to something. They latch on to, I'll say, a truth, but it's not the truth, you know? No research, you know? Unfortunately, a lot of us are, you know, we're distracted in terms of, I said, at least back in at a point, we had three channels and we all got the same bad news. But now you can go to any source where someone is saying exactly what you want to hear. And then people that. And I have to say this. I went to the Million Man March. And I was near the base of the Capitol at the time. It was amazing because a friend of mine put me on his shoulders, football player, running back for Furman. I turned around and looked at going back to the Washington Monument and to going past the Lincoln Memorial and beyond. It was amazing sight because it just blew me away. But I also remember sitting there and I said, if we would have rushed that area that time, if we would have thought about it, we would have been blown away up in there. And issues that we have gone through in this nation. I talk about, you know, what didn't happen for the most part in the military. But I remember people getting out of the water in Myrtle Beach when we got in there. I remember people getting off the elevator when I got in there. And I was usually what considered clean cut. I didn't have a beard or anything then. And I remember people getting away from me at times, and I knew what it was. I remember being detained by actually military police, you know, and over a rolling stop. And from that, they actually searched my friend's vehicle with a dog. So I remember certain issues like that. I remember going through a Smithfield and they had a billboard till the beginning of the 80s with the Klan up there.
Oh.
So this isn't something that someone told me about. This is what I seen myself in my life. You know? So I can't even imagine. Well, you know, one thing, I talked to my mother, and I got an 86. She was 86 when she passed, and now my cousin's about to be 97. And they were saying that they look at things as being worse now. And I think about it because we're less of a collective as a community. Communities aren't what they used to be. You know, so you have that camaraderie. You don't have the churches and the institution it used to be. It lost the connection to the people.
The village has changed. The village has changed.
Exactly. You know, we had a movement that was incubated out of the Black church that changed the complexion of what we dealt with in America. And that, you know, we kind of got jobs. And I talked to Kwame about is that the producer that I feel we dropped the ball, you know, our age group, because, you know, we went to college and we was looking for 1.2 children and white picket fence. And at that time, talking about, we get $35,000 a year that we would be set, you know? So the war continues. You don't take every battle, but understand the war never stops.
That's true. And that's really the truth. The one thing that my takeaway with the, with January 6th was the fact that, and I saw a common thread with the numbers of active duty military, retired military, police officers type of thing. And some of them were very proud of it. You know, they said, you know, hey, we're police. Come on, Capitol Police, join us. You're on the wrong side type of thing. I went back to a very basic and simple, I call it a litmus test. They all, at some point in time, must have taken an oath of office or an oath. You know, and I've compared the oaths with most of the ones, of course, the police departments tend to be a little different in their oaths than the officers and enlisted in the military. But one common thing that they talk about is they talk about support and defend the Constitution of the United States of America. Right. And they said, you know, and you do this without mental reservation or purpose of evasion. Now we go to January 6th. Keep in mind, mental reservation or purpose of evasion. And we know that there's a process that if you don't like the Constitution, there's a process to change it.
That's right.
I didn't see that didn't come up type of thing. No. So that was my take on it. And so that's where, and again, some of my future programs are going to address that issue and talk about that. But I've heard that talked about. And so I wanted to get your snapshot on what you saw. And it's pretty consistent with across the board what we all saw type of thing. So there's hope. We're talking about it. And that's the main thing. Like you say, in our past, we didn't. It's kind of like, you know, hey, you know, c'est la vie. You know, that's kind of like, you know, that's the way it is, you know, sign of the times type of thing. But now we're talking about it. So I do appreciate your insights on that. And also I appreciate your participating in this program. Like I said, I don't want to take up any more, much more of your time because I've learned a lot from this. And I hope our listening audience has picked up a lot. I feel that they have to, unless they doze off, like we just say in the Air Force, hey, did you sleep during the briefing? You know, type of thing. But I don't think they did that. And like I say again, for me, like I say, good Lord willing, the creek don't rise. A couple of weeks, I'll be 74. So I'm kind of that little arrogant guy. Like, I've been there, done that. Hey, like this little young junior flip here, he ain't gonna teach me nothing type of thing. But hey, I had to sit down, like Michael Hill's guy said, sit down and be still, because you're about to learn something, boy, you know, type of thing. So I do appreciate that. And like I say, God bless you and the work that you're doing.
Thank you, sir.
Like, hey, you got a fan. You just picked up a fan in me. So like I said, if it means something, great. If it doesn't mean anything, I'm going to be there anyway.
Right.
Type of thing, because I like your energy. I like the fact that you're using your background, those things that you've experienced, and you're moving it forward. You're going to get a following. Hopefully this program will help you in that process. They're going to start coming out of the woodwork because they're thinking, I like that brother. I heard him. I like what he's talking about. And they're going to see the benefit to themselves, especially, and I have to go back to water contamination issue, civilians types of things. We got to pump that up. I'm glad you have the Secretary of the EPA. Like I say again, he's in your corner type of thing. We hope that we're going to enhance that process, but it's going to be it's going to take me a little time, you know. But like they said, I think one of the Martin Luther King movies, like, how long? I said, not long, sir. How long? Not long. Right. Sir.
Yes, sir. And, you know, I do have to say something. And, you know, like I said, being from a Christian background, you know, I did talk about war, but we talk about a spiritual war. Yes. You know, more spiritual than physical. You know, I always believe that love is the most, the strongest and most powerful force in the universe. So it takes a lot of love and action. Not saying you don't defend yourself if it does become physical, but we want the war to be waged diplomatically and from a spiritual area. And that's what's going to take us, like it's always taken us.
Yes.
We got to move forward in that. You know, you don't want to come to the devil's playground, you know.
That's it, exactly. No, it's just like, it gets back to the basic tenets of what Martin Luther King talked about. You know, we're going to make progress through the peace. Gandhi from India, type of thing. And that's how it's going to have to happen, because there are certain segments of society that's waiting for the loud Black man to step up,
right?
The angry Black man to step up. And we're going to present something different from that, you know, because,
right.
You know, with our education, you know, and with the deeds that we've done, the things that we're talking about, this program here talking about it, we're not angry. We're observant, right. You know, and we know it's time to move. It's time to do something. And we're doing that. We're in that process type of thing.
Right.
So I just say to you, right on, brother. And I just want to let everybody know who's listening that we had, you know, again, Councilman Brian Jackson. And we know about District 2. We know about the work also that you're doing within Navy veteran. And we, like I say again, we're proud of you for that. And thank you for your service in that regard, too. So I'm going to go ahead and just cut it off. But I want to go ahead and stay in contact with you after the program is over. So I do appreciate, again, like I say, thank you so very much for your participation. Sometimes whenever you invite somebody, you don't know how it's going to go. You say, I hope they show, type of thing. And you did that, you know. And then sometimes people say, well, you're going to worry about CP time. I said, you mean college people time. That's what you meant, right? Yeah. Oh, yeah,
right.
College people.
Right, I get it.
You bet. Well, no problem at all. So, like I said, again, I guess this is the part where I get to the producer. And I'll just go ahead and he can probably close us out. But, again, I appreciate it. Thank you so very much. And God bless you and your work.
Thank you. Same with you. And I appreciate this opportunity to sit here and stand, you know, and communicate with you. I've heard so much about you, but I appreciate this opportunity right now.
Yeah, well, thank you so very much. Okay. Well, I'm going to throw it over to the producer and all. And he's been kind of like on the sidelines, you know. So I think we're going to go ahead and he's going to close that out for us. But again, appreciate it and look forward to another opportunity.
Yes, sir.
Well, I think, Major, you and Councilman Jackson, man, you guys did it.